bring some clarity. Was that,
did we bring clarity? Is that clarity? I think that's clarity as to why we typically don't do these episodes.
Very good. Yes. Yes, that. You're right. Hello, we are back. Welcome to the Chemist Confessions podcast. I'm Victoria.
And I'm Gloria.
And this is a human conversation on all the skincare science we talk about on the daily. We have a visitor, so I'm slightly distracted by Kumo.
He might be in and out all episode. I apologize. Yeah.
And today we are talking about ginseng.
Ooh, the mysterious roots that seem to do it all.
Yeah, it's been in our lives for, I think, historically, it's been for decades. So this one was actually pretty interesting. Yeah.
Associated with like everything, right? It's basically, and like this cure-all in Asian culture, especially.
Yep, for sure. I don't know how many times, I'm sure, Gloria, the same thing. Your parents have decided to throw some ginseng water at you to solve all your problems.
Definitely. So today we'll go over what ginseng is and really what does it do for us in skincare? Because even though it kind of has Asian roots, I've seen a trend here as like kind of this exotic Eastern ingredient that does everything from anti-aging to antioxidant. So we're going to go through all of that. So let's dive right into it.
All right, Gloria. So tell us, what is ginseng? What is this thing?
Well, to start, it is a root that has roots in traditional medicine. There are a lot of different types. I know. This is very, very funny. It is very prevalent in Chinese and Korean culture. Mm. And generally speaking, if you're talking about medicinal ginseng or even like culinary used ginseng, there are three different species that's most common. There's the Chinese mountain ones. I think it's the name is Panax noto ginseng. The Korean mountain ones, Panax ginseng. And there's even U.S. native ginseng that's grown on the east coast of the country called Panax quinquefolius.
Quinquefolius.
But we're not going to talk about quinquefolius today because in skincare, the most prevalent one is just Panax ginseng. The main active ingredients, or I guess compounds that scientists have identified to be, generally speaking, helpful, they are linked to, you know, all the wild claims that you hear about ginseng, from like longevity to anti-aging, are the ginsenosites and gintonings, which I feel like is scientists giving up on naming.
Yes, 100%. One of the things that was really wild was as I was dabbling in all of these reviews, and surprisingly, there's a lot of review papers on ginseng. Mm-hmm. And I kind of felt like they were all just compiling the same testing into these multiple reviews. But it's just wild what it's been used to treat.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So, I mean, we found papers on anything from diabetes to herpes to erectile dysfunction. So the application's really wide. But I guess one of a lot of traditional medicines, I would say not all of them have been looked at from more of modern clinical testing perspective. But because ginseng is so popular, we have found some of these papers that's trying to dig a little deeper, kind of see what about this root brings all these like potential benefits. And one of the main arenas that everyone always look at as a step one on extract is antioxidant.
Always, right? Any plant extract, I think it's always the first thing that's asked. But yeah, so in terms of what ginseng does, I think this is probably going to be a really good example of how plant extracts in dietary supplements end up in skincare. Mm-hmm. So in the reviews, a lot of the antioxidant data first starts out as in supplements. And so a couple of studies actually wanted to look at the antioxidant effect. What happens when you ingest ginseng daily? And so one study actually looked at smokers. And it's interesting because they said healthy smokers. So I'm not really sure what that means. They smoke, but vitals look good. So
early in their journey.
So they look at what happens when you take about 1.8 grams of red ginseng or a placebo for 4 weeks. Now, I have to say 4 weeks is a very short time. So usually supplement testing, it's like half a year, you know. So, but within the 4 weeks, they found no significant effects. And to be honest, I'm not very surprised.
I think that's a difficulty of a lot of these things is, you know, like This study is relatively recent. It was published in 2013.
Yeah.
Ginseng had history for hundreds of years. So,
yeah,
you know, 2010 is when they're like, okay, maybe we'll start looking at it. And they can't commit to a longer test. So like,
yeah,
this paper is almost like, okay, cool, it exists. But I have more questions.
Yeah. But there is another study that actually wanted to investigate what happens when you take ginseng. They have low dose and high dose. So low dose being 1 gram versus high dose, which is 2 grams a day for healthy people, non-smoker healthy people for 4 weeks. So what they did find was that lipid peroxidation, which is actually one aspect of quenching free radicals, they found that this had decreased with both the low and high dose. However, this wasn't the only, I guess, scenario that they looked at. They actually looked at the total reactive oxygen species and its overall antioxidant capacity, but none of these were significant. So I feel like with that data in terms of the AOX realm, antioxidant realm, it's kind of like,
it's a little maybe awkward.
I don't really know still, but that's the data we have in terms of ginseng as an antioxidant.
This episode is starting off strong.
I think what's interesting though is despite all that, there is topical data. So, you know, we're going to get into this in the next segment. But I think this is a classic scenario. They're like, antioxidant ingestion data, who knows? Let's just go straight into clinical testing on topically and just see what happens. Anyways, we are going to take a short break and then we will get into all of that. But first, let's talk about one of our products.
Speaking of plant stuff, Aquafix happens to have one of our favorite plant extracts, Centella Asiatica. But it's not just any Centella extract, it's an isolated molecule of metacassocyte that is actually responsible for all of Centella's great skin soothing benefits. Fun fact, metacassocyte is also known for having a synergistic effect along with vitamin C.
And for a personal anecdote, I definitely have oily acneic skin. For my oily acneic skin, I use Aquafix in the morning as my one and done underneath sunscreen. This hydrating gel is actually all I need for my skin, especially during summertime, so that my skin doesn't get too heavy or shiny.
And someone with really dry skin, Aquafix is my staple year-round as a hydrating serum, no matter what new product I might be testing at the moment. And for all you podcast listeners, please use the discount code CCPODCAST2024 for 15% off your first order.
All right, we are back. And now it's time to answer the question, is ginseng useful in skincare?
Question.
All right, so I'm going to rant for just a little bit. Uh-huh. When I was dabbling in the research, going down the rabbit hole, reading the reviews, I have to say it was really painful trying to figure out the sourcing of ginseng, because as chemists, we can tell you the ingredient name is very confusing. They are all under and will be listed under as Panax ginseng. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't actually mean that it comes from a single source, like a Korean red ginseng or a Chinese ginseng. It could still come from different sources. And we're going to get into that in our final segment when we talk about products. But holy cow, it was really hard to organize and even just come to a conclusion on what type of ginseng, how it was sourced, and the extract itself, how it was made. And weirdly enough, even the root versus the leaf was confusing. So that's my little rant on like how painful this was trying to even come to a conclusion.
Yeah, side note, I think for those of you who might be new to our content, you might be wondering, what do chemists do? And this is a big part of our job. Like when we are looking at materials, looking at sourcing, you have to really get in the weeds with every possible source of a material. You have to look at the documentation, where is it really from? What are the active compounds actually in it? But then all that boils down to a simple ingredient name that you see on the Inky list that, you know, to be honest, only gives you a small snapshot of what that ingredient really means. And for us, I think in the beginning, we did a lot of decode that ILs where we go through ingredient lists with people, which can be helpful for certain ingredients. We can tell you for all the reasons Victoria just mentioned, not the case with plant extracts, because we can't even tell you just based on ingredient list the quality of these extracts.
So, with that, let's go through some of the data. And I think this is, again, a good example of what happens with testing. There's actually, surprisingly, a lot of in vivo mouse model studies that have been done, less on the human clinical data, but we will share that as well. All right. So first, the first study we actually want to share is continuing with the antioxidant theme. They actually wanted to look at UVB induced damage. What I should mention is this in vivo mouse model, they actually are testing ginseng leaf extract. Okay. And so with that, they are applying this topical on the backs of mice for 10 weeks. And after that, then they will put it under a UVB lamp and kind of create that UVB irradiation. And then after that, take some measurements. And through this, they did find that, I will read the results here. So they find that the topical treatment with the ginseng extract did improve this UVB-induced epidermal thickness and impairment of skin barrier function. It suppressed a bunch of markers that are typically found that show that your skin has undergone and has collected UVB damage. Mm-hmm. And I think the one thing that I have to share with Gora, and she might like, is this is their conclusion. This ginseng extract possesses sunscreen properties and may exhibit photochemoprotective activities inside of the skin of mice. And I was like, wow, that's a really aggressive claim.
Oh, wait, did I miss anything from the conclusion? That's a hell of a claim to make from whatever I just heard. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to mention they only tested it on 8 mice per group, so 16 mice total, and that was their takeaway. I'm like, wait a second.
8 mice equals new sunscreen, baby. God damn it, Kumo.
It is totally leaving that in.
Yeah. All right. Just stay there and don't move. All right, cool. Yeah. Again, I think this is why sometimes these episodes, some of them are not very long, but you'll be surprised how long it takes us to put these together, because
I know
you can't just read the conclusions. When you look at the data, you read the conclusion, you're like, huh? Like, why?
Yeah, I mean, just because you see improvement doesn't mean it's a sunscreen,
yeah,
or an antioxidant. You still don't know yet. So anyway, so that's one of the studies that talks about antioxidant from an in vivo mouse model.
Yep. And ginseng is not done with the mice yet. We have another paper that's also a topical in vivo mouse model. This one, they want to explore ginseng's capability to treat eczema. Essentially, they're trying to find out if it's a strong enough anti-inflammatory to treat symptoms associated with eczema. This one, of course, uses a different set of ginseng-based actives. It's from the roots, and they looked in particular extracts that's rich in what they call RH2 and RG3. Basically, it's just like two compounds that's been identifying ginseng to be helpful or potentially helpful. The good thing is this is done topically, so this is not a mouse oral study, but they did put it on mouse skin lesions to see if it helps. And it does seem like there's potential. That's about where that one ends.
And I'm really glad Gloria talked about this one, because I did want to take a moment to talk about how mouse model, the kind of challenges there are in translating that to human skin. So back in my day when I did mice research, I actually did it on acne. And if you can think about it, mice don't get acne. So how are you going to test acne topicals on mice? Mm. And so what I had to do was actually inject. I had to create a slight wound in the mouse ear. And I'm really sorry for animal lovers. I understand, but this is just the nature of animal testing. You create a slight wound and you want to apply acne bacteria to the ear and see if you can get a pimple to form. And I can tell you, this is not always very successful.
For those of you who have dealt with mice before, they do not like to be held and stuff applied to their ears delicately.
Yeah. So they're asleep. Oh, I should mention, we apply them when they're asleep. Mm. And then after that, they get a cone of shame, because mice will clean themselves and will no longer have the acne. So that's kind of the nature of mouse models. And I did want to mention that the reason why I have to share is because in this study, they had to do the same thing. Mice don't get eczema. So they actually have to create kind of like a
inflammation,
abrasive lesion wound scenario on their ear that will somehow kind of mimic that inflammation scenario. So I just wanted to share why in vivo, like rodent models or any sort of animal testing, the kind of like challenges in kind of taking like what your takeaway would be from this data. So yeah.
I have a question.
Yes.
Do they sell like mice cones of shame in bulk, or do you have to fashion them out of something in the lab?
They sell them in bulk.
That's great.
And I can't tell you how many times, because you go in, you do your, you know, you perform your, apply whatever that you're testing, and then you obviously have to wait a few days, and you just go back and you're like, please, please don't scratch it off. Don't scratch it off. And there's always like one or two of the 10 that you're like, damn it.
They're probably like, screw this cow.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't have enough data points. Ah. So anyways, pains of researching. Okay. So that gives you a scenario of all the types of in vivo testing that they've done. Mm-hmm. Let's just move on to the clinical. Yeah. There's surprisingly a few.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised that there's any human testing. I will say, yes. The animal testing, like Victoria mentioned, it's usually they see it as a red light, green light type of thing. If it shows any promise, like these two studies seems like, okay, these genes and compounds seem to be doing something, seems to help with inflammation. Sometimes they're like, wow, that's good enough for us. And that's it. But there's actually in vivo clinicals done on actual human face skin. And let's take a look at one anti-aging one that they did.
Let's start with our first clinical in anti-aging, where they're actually going to look at the crow's feet region. And I should mention here, and as stated in the paper, I actually am just going to read what they wrote. They say, Pinnacle ginseng root is considered the most important part of the plant for medicinal purpose. And most studies in its ginsenosides have focused on the root. However, several studies have reported that the leaf exhibited higher contents of ginsenoside than the main root, and that the content of these leaf extracts, ginsenosides, was higher than that of the root itself. And so basically, Gore and I have kind of been talking about this. It kind of feels like the root and all the testing behind it has been exhausted, and they would like to move on. So anyways, with this clinical, they actually are going to test the leaf extract on 17 subjects for 8 weeks. And through that, they do some imaging, track it over, and they did find that there's a significant improvement in the crow's feet in terms of depth and surface area of the wrinkles over these 8 weeks. And we'll show the images here of the before and afters. They took images from at T0, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, and 8 weeks. And for those of you listening, I'm sorry you can't experience this thing that we are all experiencing, and that is squinting at the images to see these improvements.
Yeah, it's not your imagination. If you're, you know, tuning in this episode on YouTube, press pause. It's going to take you a little bit of time. Zoom in. I hope your laptop or your phone has high definition. Zoom in again, and you might see, yes. By 8 weeks, it does look a little better.
I think it's like the wrinkles shortened a little bit.
Yeah, and then the depth could be a little bit less. Mm-hmm. I mean, generally speaking, I think that's the nature of instrumental measurements. Well, Victoria and I do prefer these because they give us a more thorough picture of the degree of improvement you can expect. And we do always say that even though these numbers sound smaller than consumer perceptions of like 98% agree that skin looks better, there's still like a zone where like below which you're like, but can you really tell it's improving? Say if a computer imaging says, oh yeah, crow's feet improved by 5%. What does that really mean to the naked eye?
Exactly. But we'll move on because there's surprisingly more clinicals.
You know, I think this tinfoil hat theory is very, very, very true of the, they probably tested all the root stuff and they're like, their roots are like, okay, but like, I don't know, man, it doesn't seem that exciting. So they test the leaf, and now they're like, you know what? Biochemistry stuff. We are going to start changing up these extract a little bit to jazz it up. So this next anti-aging study is actually done on enzyme-modified versions of ginseng. So they this is also a petite study we should mention. They looked at 23 randomized human subjects. And what I do like about these small studies, and I think it's actually kind of brave for a small study like this to compare with a placebo. So we're only talking about Kumo sketch. So
hello, Kumo.
So we're talking about just like 10 subjects in each group at the same time, because there is a placebo, we are able to get a little bit more info than, you know, like a 20% study testing just the cream. Yeah. And what they did is they use global photo damage score and looked at roughness, smoothness, depth, kind of like the works of general skin condition. And from their study, the conclusion said that no participants reported adverse reactions. Cool. And they said it sufficiently suppressed eye wrinkle formation by decreasing various roughness measures on the basis of assessment with non-invasive devices. What, I don't know what sufficiently suppressed means, but my guess is it did something.
It sounds like it decreased, but might not be significant.
Yeah. Well, which is not surprising. If you only have 10 people, exactly, it's hard to get anything super significant. Come on, no, literally the worst place you can possibly bleed.
Ah, yes. Please show everyone your butthole.
not the lap, not right now.
The listeners are spared of Kumo's very forward introduction.
anyway, yeah, so it seems like this is an interesting early clinical. I would say to me, if I'm reading this clinical, that might be kind of a green light for me to want to proceed with a different test with maybe a higher dose of it and see where it goes. But that's where we're at right now in this moment with these like enzyme modified ginseng extract.
Yeah. And finally, they actually tested on acne. So they tested a 3%. This is ethanol extracted red ginseng. And if you're like, why does that matter? I want to tell you, processing matters, because you can go from a ginseng water that's literally just like a soup to actual processing to kind of collect higher concentrations of the good stuff.
Sorry, give me a second.
No, you're good. You're good.
He's like rubbing himself on the mic and I can hear him rub himself on the mic. Come on, stop. Okay, cool.
Go, bro.
Be free. Be free.
He's like, how dare you? All right. So they wanted to look at it and they tested it on 20 subjects for 4 weeks. And we'll show the results here of their clinical evaluation. Over this period of time, they found that the oil content on skin had significantly decreased at both the 2 week and 4 week mark. They found that oxidized sebum content of skin had decreased, though I don't believe it's significant. They found redness had actually statistically decreased, which I thought was interesting with all of the eczema studies that they were looking at. And finally, they did look at whitehead, blackhead, and papule count, and they did find that it did significantly decrease as well at 2 weeks and 4 weeks. But they did say no statistically significant improvements were found in the actual nodule. So I guess they were looking at the severity of these lesions and whatnot and didn't see an improvement there. So to be honest, slightly interesting, kind of like Gloria said, it's that green light to study more. But I did want to take note that it's 3% of the extract, which is significantly higher than a lot of the other papers and the concentrations that they were looking at. So, yeah.
Yeah. And we can tell you that in terms of, you know, how much ginseng is actually used in products, that's it's kind of in that category of things for us right now.
Totally. And so that kind of paints the picture of the testing that's been done around ginseng. And probably your takeaway is, holy cow, it's all over the place. There's leaves, there's enzyme modified, there's red ginseng, like who knows? And I'll leave you with the general sentiment of researchers who wrote these review papers. One paper wrote, based on this data, it is concluded that the efficacy of ginseng root extract is not established beyond reasonable doubt for any of these indications. The widespread use of ginseng as a herbal remedy warrants more rigorous investigations to assess its efficacy and safety.
I think we agree with that sentiment, yeah.
Exactly. And one other one follows up and says, ginseng could be a valuable resource for future drug development. However, further higher quality evidence is required.
Yeah, and such is the state of things. I think a long time ago, I heard this podcast talking about the value of ginseng and people trying to, because like wild-grown ginseng is a lot more more lucrative or a lot more expensive than like farm ginseng. And then Korean ginseng is a lot more expensive than American ginseng. But then there's like, of course, on the black market, you'll have people who try to pass off like farm grown as wild, American as Korean. And it's like a super crazy world.
Yeah, exactly. So to sum up. All right, Gloria. Antioxidants.
Meh.
Yeah. We would say pretty weak.
Yeah.
Anti-inflammatory.
Maybe.
Yeah,
and
possibly.
I think this is probably one of the more promising sites of ginseng that, you know, we will say it needs to be studied further, but seems like they keep circling back to, even in the anti-aging stuff. Even the anti-aging studies, they seem to, you know, look at how it might help with irritation in general and those markers.
Totally. And then anti-aging, I feel like there might be something there, but I think and we'll talk about this later, is testing is really going to tell us what it actually can do for anti-aging.
Yeah, and I think this is such a ginseng, such a the perfect ingredient to illustrate why we have our favorite extracts and favorite plant stuff that we choose to put in our product. Just to highlight it, we kind of mentioned it in the blurb earlier that Madocassisia or Centella is kind of our go-to soother. And this is because Centella asiatica as a plant have been through studies where they kind of narrow it down to the compound Madocassisia or asiaticaceae too, to help with these anti-inflammation indications. So we are able to, as chemists, we are able to source or find, either find extracts higher in these concentrations, or in the case of Aquafix, we just use straight Madocassisia to help with, for more potency. But this is not the case for ginseng. It's all, most of 99% of ginseng you'll find is labeled the same exact way. And just by all the data that we went over, none of them are created equal, you know, whether it comes from root, leaf, has it been fermented, has it been processed with some enzymes. It's all different, but you just can't tell based on the ingredient list. So that's why we ourselves would say, you know, interesting, but really hard for us to stand by and be like, yeah, everyone go and get yourself a ginseng cream.
And don't forget, plants are complex. They have a ton of other constituents aside from these active compounds. So it only makes sense that you're going to need to whittle down what this plant does to those actual components to really reap those benefits. So couldn't have explained it better myself. Let's take a break.
Oh, please do.
All right. Today's my turn for the animal fun fact. This is going to be a quick one for your trivia nights. Today's spotlight, I want to put on the sea otter. Found out that this adorable marine mammal has a really weird, unique quirk about their bodies. First of all, they have actually the densest fur out there of any mammal. Did not know that. Second thing is they actually have pockets in their armpits. And this is where they store food. And they store their favorite rock so that they can pull it out to crack open crustaceans when they eat.
They have an armpit purse.
Exactly. They have a handy dandy toolbox. And I just want to call out as a uplifting moment and awareness for them is they're actually a really important part of regulating sea urchin population. And these urchins will really mess up kelp forests and they cause extensive damage. So go, little sea otters, find your favorite rocks, keep on eating.
I love that, like, you know, for all the women out there, us included, that complain that our clothing have no pocket.
Yeah.
You consider your armpit. This would be very convenient. Or maybe this is this, like, marine mammal version of putting your credit card in your bra.
Yeah, 100%. That's a good way of putting it. Yep. So that's awesome. That's the sea otter.
Oh, we finally went back to the cute and cuddly.
Yeah, try to, you know, stop, you know, depressing people with sweating, dehydrated bats and whatnot.
Oh, right. Anyway, right. We're back.
We're going to wrap this up with how to shop for ginseng skincare.
Good night.
So we did end on the fact that, yes, ginseng is definitely not a must. We are not going to be telling you to go run out and you need to add your ginseng to your skincare today. Also, a chemist complaint is, it's really hard for us to decode ginseng stuff in skincare. Yeah. Usually you're going to find that Inky is going to say Panax ginseng extract or Panax ginseng root extract. And we can't tell you where it's from, how it's processed, what constituents might be in it. That might be interesting. We don't know. So that's what's really hard. And so today we're not going to really paint a landscape for you guys. Mm-hmm. We're just going to talk about a couple products that include ginseng. So this is really for Gloria. I'm going to just share with her two products and see how Gloria feels.
Yay. Can't wait.
All right. So we got to talk about Sawasu. I think they're probably the most famous brand that has ginseng stuff. So
I feel like they're like the granddaddy of like Premier K-Beauty that features ginseng as one of their core ingredients.
Totally. And they talk about a lot their ginseng complex. I believe it's their, I think they refer to it as their saponin complex. And so they have a concentrated ginseng renewing cream classic. Mm-hmm. This is priced at $260 for 2 ounces.
So reasonable.
I'm going to blitz through the IL, and Gloria, just go ahead and skim as well and see if there's anything that brings your attention. But they've got water, butylene glycol, dimethicone, glycerin, triethyl hexanoin, squalane, hydrogenated polyisobutane, 1,2-hexanediol, vinyl dimethicone, methicone, silsquoxane, cross-polymer powder. They've got more polymers, more emulsifiers, and I'm going to keep going to where we're going to hit about the middle part where you'll see their complex hydrolyzed ginseng saponins. And that's really it. I'm not going to read any more than that. They've got a few peptides at the very end.
Yes, I see the saponin. I also see a Panax ginseng root extract on top of the saponin.
Good call.
And some other extracts. Well, okay.
They also have Panax ginseng flower extract, which we haven't talked about. So that's interesting.
Oh. Well, I think first of all, just looking at this as a cream, for me, it wouldn't be, as someone with dry skin, this wouldn't necessarily be my go-to moisturizer. Mm. It doesn't quite have, it doesn't, dimethicone, I don't know which dimethicone they're using, but that seems to be their core occlusive that they're using. So you can expect a slightly lighter finish than something that might use a heavier occlusive like your Butter's Waxes or Petrolatum.
Yeah.
I do also want to add that if you're using it for, as your low moisturizer, I would, and if you're dry skin, I would recommend using more of a hydrating serum underneath it, just because, you know, glycerin's in that fourth spot. Butylene glycol, while is a humectant, it's not the most hydrating thing in the world, so you might need a little bit more water grabbers. Then in terms of like the ginseng complex, it's kind of hard to comment, right? So this all of it comes after their fragrance, and in the same spot as their similar area as their phenoxyethanol, which means it could be at the highest level over 1%, maybe. Or it could be well below that. I don't really know. It could be rearranged. Yeah. But then again, like Victoria mentioned, there's a blend of a lot of ginseng stuff. It's their proprietary complex. How does that perform, and how does that measure against all the clinical studies we just went through with everyone? I don't really know.
That's the question there, is I couldn't find any clinical data to share here. So this is one of those mystery luxury creams. And I think you brought up such a good point. This is clearly one of those creams that's meant to be layered. Because it's like that in between. It's like not quite super light, but not quite nourishing enough. So that's just a great comment there. So anyways, so that's the first product. The second product is one of their, I would say, more popular serums. It's the Sulwhasoo Anti-Aging First Care Activating Serum. This is $89 for 2 ounces, the same volume. So really quick, running through their IL, it's water, alcohol, butylene glycol, betaine, 1,2-hexanediol. You got a few emulsifiers. You've got propanediol. I'm going to blitz through it. You've got bicalin, which is actually another root that's known for its antioxidant properties. You've got fragrance. Then you hit adenosine. You've got more fragrance. We're going to keep going. Preservatives. You have maticasticide. And 3-O-ethyl ascorbic acid. A few more extracts, and then you finally get to Panax ginseng root extract. So that's actually the only ginseng really in this product.
Oh, that's interesting. So from what between these two aisles, I think, and the price point, I would definitely lean closer to the serum.
Mm-hmm.
Just based on the aisle, I will say that Bicalin is relatively high up, even though it's not part of their ginseng complex. Bicalin has pretty interesting data, though I will say it's not the most stable, guys. So if you see this one turning colors on you, it's not your imagination. It has interesting, even though I think 3-O-ethyl at that level probably doesn't do much, but it has a blend of a lot of actives like maticasticide, the vitamin C derivative. I even spy licorice root or the dipotassium glycerhizate form. So yeah, I guess the money comes from all the different types of ginseng that's in the cream.
Maybe. Who knows? I don't know that complex. It's one of those proprietary things. So, but I also agree because they also did a clinical. So they did an 8-week clinical study on 30 women ages between 39 to 60. So more mature skin. They found that there was a 5.9% improvement in elasticity, a 9.9% increase in strengthening the moisture barrier, and a 14.5% increase in hydration. And those numbers don't sound the most exciting, but this is a classic result of doing instrumental testing. And I do think the hydration piece is interesting because this product is actually really more of the gel kind of consistency. Mm-hmm. So despite it's not your typical like lotion emulsion cream. So I just want to point that out there.
Yeah, actually, I think this is a good testament that their blend of active does do something because it also has that higher level of alcohol. So it's not any sort of high levels of humectants that's giving you the hydration. It could really be the case where your moisture barrier in general is doing a little better.
Yeah. So this or that, we like the serum better. So, but all in all, hopefully that gives you an idea of maybe how to approach shopping for ginseng. We really think it's more of a fun to have, a nice to have, than a necessary must. So hopefully that bring some clarity. Was that, did we bring clarity?
Is that clarity? Yeah. I think that's clarity as to why we typically don't do these episodes.
Very good. Yes. Yes, that. You're right.
I feel like I have to like scrub myself and like do an episode on like glycolic acid or something after this. Be like, come on, give me more glycolic, please.
I know. You know, and I have to say, this is not even the worst plant extract we've had to talk about.
Actually, you know what? That's such a good point. It might sound like we spent 30 minutes shisting on ginseng, but it has in vivo data, which is already more than some of these more exotic ingredients that people tout, but have zero data behind. So yeah,
like
that's
seaweed,
fair.
Seaweed stuff.
Oh, that's another wild. Like, but what kind of seaweed? How did you get that seaweed? Did you ferment the seaweed?
Oh my God.
I know. I think between this and the last episode, we had to like really dig through in vitro data to like extract information out of there. Yeah. I think I'm going to need an episode on like glycolic acid.
All right. So that wraps up this episode. If you have any burning questions, where can they find us, Gloria?
You can write to us at info@chemistconfessions.com. You can find us on our website at chemistconfessions.com. Last but not least, visit us on our Instagram, chemist.confessions, where we pull people regularly on your burning skincare questions to put together these, I hope, helpful episodes together.
So helpful. So helpful, right, guys?
But otherwise, we will see you guys next week.
Thank you. Bye, guys.
Bye.